You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. Hello, Robin. Is it
hello?
Is it Regler or Regler?
Regler.
Regler. All
right. Although even within my own family, there are several variations.
So. Oh, okay. But anyway,
it was one of those names concocted by an immigration official. So nobody
right.
really.
Sure. But it's like Joy, I would have said Laden at first, but it's
yeah.
Joy Laden, right?
Uh-huh.
You don't have to ask people things. And this is a simple one because it doesn't have to do with explaining what the meaning of the word is.
You don't have to look it up.
That's right. You're on your own with that question, eh? Well, you know, you've got a very admirable CV. This is another of those occasions when if I told everything about you myself in introducing you, it's an omnibus because you've gotten things going on a national scale. And at the same time, you have retired, leaving it into others' firm hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you've got several books of poetry. But what I noticed, I did look at a couple of your essays on that you had. I like those. Those are good. I mean,
they're about my work mostly.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. You're an essayist of certain subjects that you're really interested in.
Yes.
And yet you've got this blog, The Other Mother, Letters from the Outposts of Lesbian Parenting, that's really been admired and named as the best of all the Houston parenting blogs by the Nickelodeon. I guess that's the movie TV.
That's right.
In about 10 years ago, 2009. So you've done so many things. And this, I don't want you to talk about too much about writers and writing programs. I want your poetry. I want to hear your poetry because we have 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask you because 30 minutes is pretty fast.
The type of poetry that abstract poetry is and how it's represented everywhere these days is modern poetry, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people in the world who haven't changed their mythological metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
They're still stuck in the way the stage was set back in the 1940s, 50s. They don't see the new stage.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's what
And it's the same with art, too.
Oh, very much so. But 20th century art from the cubistic on, well, even the impressionists with their blur of color were abstractists, weren't they? They were abstract painters.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you have presented it is very much that it leads your readers to question and to use their imagination.
That's right.
To let the imagination just roll on like you're listening to a Flaming Lips song. You know?
Uh-huh. That's right.
Right. So anyway, I think say Mondrian, I mean, I'm just talking with you right now. We can do this.
Yeah.
It's fine. Mondrian, who eventually pulled into the planar blocks of color, often elementary color, and in a composition, all different compositions to represent what he thought was coming about here. These landscapes might be trees. Yeah. Don't you see the tree in that one?
Uh-huh.
And it's
interesting, though, and I've always tried to make this point as a teacher. You mentioned Flaming Lips. And in music, people are much more willing to go with the abstract. They just listen to the music. They might understand the words. They might not.
But it doesn't matter
so much. But Lady Gaga can wear a dress made out of raw meat.
Yep.
And it's just something in the magazines, right? But it is different in writing for people, I think, and it is different for people in art.
And there's so much that's strange about that, in as much as much of the diction isn't cognitively difficult. Uh-huh, so you don't uh-huh. have to think, what the heck is that fancy
yeah,
word?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so blue and green and say, so, you know, with your book, your title, Into the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought of a color.
Uh-huh.
And I, let's choose a color.
Uh-huh.
And the what's prevalent in my mind right now? Well, because I was looking at Wallace Stevens, blue came to mind.
Right. And it is from Stevens. You probably saw that.
Oh, gee. Yes. I mean, yeah. Wallace Stevens was, along with the T.S. Eliot, let's say, uh-huh. part of this whole break.
Yes.
Eliot says he just wants poetry to be naked poetry. I don't uh-huh. want it to be a problem of meanings and content. And what is this thing called style? No.
Uh-huh. My daughter made the little trailer for the book.
Oh, yeah.
And,
uh-huh.
and the way it works is at the end, it says into the, and then it's this roll of words, like into the sky, into the cave, into the ditch, into the blue, into the, and then it ends up with into the.
My son likes wordplay, uh-huh. and he says, weren't you into the group called the?
That's right. Yeah, people have asked me about that.
Oh, and yeah. I said, oh, yes, I do have a couple of discs of them.
The. And that was from the Stevens, too, I think.
Sure. But I really love the abstract poem he wrote, you know, the one that's really trying to put it into a sort of explanation, if that's what is actually needed, where uh-huh. he talked about the lecturer composing himself.
Uh-huh.
He hems the planet rose, hems uh-huh. the rose, and he haws it ripe, uh-huh. ripe and red and right.
Uh-huh.
This particular, he says, this particular question here. Well, the particular answer to the particular question is not the point. It's the question that is the point.
That is right.
Yeah. So yeah. we're going to start then. We'll get into some good verse here. I really like working with the poems. I really okay. like it, what trips it did to my brain. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
you. This is Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore, and on KTAH 101.9. Sound Poetry today is welcoming Robin Riegler, who is a personality well known around the country, actually working with the writers in the schools, which has its own witty acronym, WITS. She's for 22 years been working to change it from a grassroots organization into a whole national movement that has 40 programs, sister programs across the United States, but she's not doing that now. That is an organization, though, if any of you are interested in programs for poets and writers, there is a place to look. And so we have Robin here today because of the publication, really a contemporary collection, Into the, but this was not just a book of poems. This is a winner of a Best Book Award, and a Backlash Press put that one out, right? Which is a distinguished press. I went and looked that up there. So you've got wonderful degrees, Master of Fine Arts, Iowa Writers Workshop, PhD at the University of Houston Creative Writing Program. And all sorts of magazines have, and poetic journals have had a chance to expose some of her verse, but she's also a journalist of great note. Her blog, The Other Mother, Letters from the Outposts of Lesbian Parenting, has been named the best Houston parenting blog for quite some time in the past. It was named that. And so it's been ongoing, has it not, Robin?
It did go on until my children told me that they did not want me blogging about them anymore. They said they would start their own blogs and blog about themselves, which they did.
Okay, so fair enough, but very, very good credits on that, and many people were influenced by it.
Yeah.
Let's start with your reading a poem, and what we need to enjoy is what maybe you have to say about it, or even what somebody might question about it as you read it. So let's get going on one of your little dramas, if you want. let's hear a drama from you.
Okay, what would you like to start with?
Well, you know, the one drama that I thought was really captivated beautifully, your message of the abstract, but in a way of playing with the thoughts and the actions to make a story, or give the listener a chance to fantasize story, if that is the case. A scene, a vignette, whatever. But the graffiti artist, I love that. The graffiti artist from Into the.
Okay. So I've always had a love of graffiti. I sort of feel like maybe you're not supposed to love it so much, but I really always have. And at one point, one of my favorite local graffiti artists was called Next Guy. And so in this poem, I'm sort of fangirling over this graffiti artist.
Yeah.
Next Guy. The graffiti artist. Inventions germinate in his head. He, Next Guy, the astronaut hero of some dim underworld. Let me in. Next Guy has only the two-fisted for friends. He wouldn't give me the time of day. I worship him. His spray paints torch the color of tear gas. A fire escape looms with an obese question. I am under his spell. The last cop tinkers around outside the corner store. Will he notice me with eyes of stars? Like hell, I bet. Now, next.
Very good. I wonder, that's the one I said, I think has a bit of the Flaming Lips scenario. They sing songs about little scenes, simple scenes, a lot of psychedelic music. And I believe graffiti has definitely got that kind of psychedelic writing from the albums in the old days, the style that they use, right?
Uh-huh.
With the big bulbous shapes. That's why I love that one. And the Beast Question.
And it reminds me of like album covers. Graffiti does.
Yeah, album covers, right?
Yeah. So we don't always have album covers anymore.
No.
But well, just because a lot of people stream music instead of buying albums. But back in the day, that was a huge thing.
Yes, it was. And the graffiti artists have, I think, improved over the years, being much more careful about how they authentically want to present their moniker, their tag.
That's right.
But when you see them on trains, I think some of them are moving.
Uh-huh.
No, maybe the train is moving, but I think actually move me to look at them and see the different styles and enjoy the colors that somebody put into one, you know?
Yes, and I follow different artists and see how they develop and just sort of like artists, right? They are artists, really.
When the last cop was tinkering around there, that's a little cautionary. I thought, uh-oh, are they going to have to quit this right now or get nabbed, you know. So I thought, you know, there's a little bit of danger around the corner there. But the guy has his eyes of stars. He's the astronaut hero of some dim underworld. He got those stars in his eyes.
Uh-huh.
So really wonderfully graphic itself.
Uh-huh.
Graphic drama. Anyway, I love that. But the other one that reminded me a little of it because of the drama, whether it's in my mind or was in, put in my mind by the poem, is The Town I Know. The long, epic kind of mural, several scenes in that one.
Okay. Town I Know is, it's supposed to be like a mural, and it is the town I grew up in Arkansas. It's they're all little vignettes from this town in Arkansas that was very small, about 4,000 people, and my family owned the only store in town, so literally everybody knew my family. So this is it. The Town I Know, a mural. I want you to see it. The blue archivist wallows, mild-mannered in the Sabbath sunset. Anyone can tell you, he's pining. The healer, hands never in his pockets, strolls down the sidewalk past a wild field of sunflowers that pierces a former floor and sooty bricks. A mercantile building used to be there. The black and white linoleum tiles crack open and bake in the summer sun. They all know my daddy. They all know my mama. But they're not sure which one of the little rainbows I am. The geezers on that sloping porch are trading stories about their wars. Remember when the grain elevator became the tallest building in the town? When the teacher looks right at me, I feel needles in my mind. My pal on rollerblades, she moves like fluid down my street. Hello, she sings, slowing down slowly, looping around the neighbor's driveway. She sits on my step to smoke a cigarette and chat. The insects hop from limbs to branches, their legs singing cranky country songs. A lizard lets its back blend into bark. Green leaves feel good about themselves, but the fruit in this tree looks embarrassed. A billboard reassures us that Jesus is loving us all. The philanderer crouches down as though to tie his shoe. We all know what he's thinking. I want you to see it. A girl wearing gingham lights a candle that smells like America. I know some rainmakers who meet secretly in the wings of cathedrals and talk about time. But that happens over in Europe. We don't do those things. In the town I know, we were a family. I was the brainy one. My sister was the socialite. My brother was the class clown. Zooming back from Memphis, driving down the highway in his pajamas and red bathrobe, the blue archivist hurries home. When the state trooper peers out from under the wide brim of his hat, it's Sunday morning. The speed limit broken up like clouds in the sky. The floor of his Lincoln Town car littered with not recycled beer cans. What's your rush? Asked the trooper. Late for church, explains the archivist. The 16-year-olds laugh like savages. I flirt with them to cheer myself up. The towheads spend the afternoon fishing, and the lake actually falls asleep for a few minutes. It happens every couple of years. We are proud of our sunsets. I want you to see it. Perched in the western sky, the sun's rosy sleeve shimmers like an excellent idea. That pretty lady, she hasn't been back in years. Cut her hair, moved to the big city, makes big money, dances only with strangers. The blue archivist, he remembers it all. And the truth is always bad news. Darkness, I have been so lonely. Lie down with me in the grass and read me our future in the constellation of fireflies. Now, here's our friend Walt Whitman, ambling down the road as the night coats our drippy lids and the fear spurts out a bit. We name ourselves the age of something certain and dream the simple dreams of simple sleep.
So from graffiti to a mural in a smallish town that I hope everybody enjoyed that little cinematic trip down the montage of scenes and characters in scenes. It does really capture quite a bit of the town in my sort of feeling of what I gained from it. Because I've seen some of the size of the towns that actually try to make themselves known as the mural town. It might be a seed producing operation somewhere nearby that, but beautiful murals of wagon trains and buffalo and things like that. And I love this this feeling of, again, a drama going on. There's that one, for me, just almost captivating sort of cinematic trope where the archive is stopped and it's got some beer cans in the back. Uh-oh. Like once again, teacher coming in. But then, what's your rush? Asks the trooper. Late for church, trying to cover up. It's just got so much in it that is one of those tropes that everybody can't help but just see it like it's in black and white on the TV or on the in the theater. Yeah.
And when you see the book, there's like these pictures of like old Arkansas barns and towns that my father took. Mm-hmm. And my daughter took my father's old photos. My father's no longer alive, but she made this collage out of his photos and the words from my Arkansas poems and put them together. And they're actually in the book.
Oh, well, that's great to memorialize something like that. But you're putting, the abstract idea is, of course, is interested in space and time and the nowness of things, that things are really only conceptually as they are once. Uh-huh. An imitation, you can't be sure.
Uh-huh.
You'd have to question whether that's kind of deja vu or the same thing. No. So what you're doing in some of these vignettes that you present, you're really asking the reader to participate.
That's
you
right.
Ask something actually of the reader to say, put your imagination to work a little bit and get into some of this. Which scene really got you caught? Which book do you? Because you can go
and,
good way and
that,
enjoy.
I was just going to say, in that one in particular, there are lots of things that really did come from the town and really mm-hmm. happened. And of course, I didn't use the names, but the Blue Archivist really is somebody who lived in the town, and all these different things.
Character.
Yes.
Uh-huh. In this poem, he seems to have arrived out of a James Joyce short story, A Man in a Macintosh.
Uh-huh. And I was thinking of the Walt Whitman part at the end as kind of the way the poem is supposed to work.
What a slice of Americana there.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. That it was sort of bringing together sort of real people in this mural and saying, here is America as I first knew it in the town I grew up in.
I love playing with the images because though people say abstract art really is going to try and avoid the object, avoid the subjective things and objects, images that are so crisp and clean and described just by their word, in fact, avoid the object, right? To get the questioning going into the abstract idea that you enjoy so much there is what is the element of it that you feel that you really relish when you put this kind of poem together?
Uh-huh. I feel like it's like showing photographs or something. My father was known to put these slideshows together, and I don't know if people remember, you know, the old slide projector, and, you know, it made that noise and you turn out all the lights. And anyway, he would show us these slideshows. It wasn't just for my family, it was for all of our friends, filling up the house, you know, with all these people. And I think of this poem as a bit of a slideshow. What's abstract about it is that from one stanza to the next, there may not be a connection, which is true in a slideshow too, right?
Right.
It is what we see and what we say about it that connects the whole thing.
That's right. What you, the listener, or the reader of the poem, should you see it on a page, what it makes you think and be, imagine, how it makes you want to stop reading or continue to find something that is going to grab. Mm-hmm. Why not continue with a poem that's not, it's warming up, but it's not quite grasping yet. You've got a question. Will there be something that I will really be able to find noteworthy here? And that's the one, if that's the case, that's what you latch onto.
Uh-huh, that's right. And it's a collaboration. It's like the writer does half and the reader does half. And the meaning is in between.
Well, I think that's an important engagement that so many writers really want. But I think the abstract poem is kind of craving that you've got to be able to deal with this somehow, and it should be pleasurable. It's meant for pleasure. So take it in advance that there's something here that's meant to please you. There we go. So therefore you ask the questions. But let's go on to a very important poem that shows some of the features that you have presented in the other ones, but in a different way. Message to the Goldfish.
Okay. So in this one, you can imagine, it's pretty simple. I'm looking at a goldfish bowl, but I'm not really describing the goldfish bowl. I'm talking to the fish. And so this is that kind of situation in which really the fish is not a fish at all. It's me talking to myself. And I think there are ways in which we often do this, that we find ways to find our own feelings and to find our own meanings somehow. And it could be, I mean, basically, if we don't say it in some other way, it's going to leak out. It's going to make a mess. But in this one, it's a little speech that I'm saying to the goldfish. Message to the goldfish. Listen to me, fish. You can feel pain underwater. My ears were unhappy once, but I was not up to making large demands. I am breaking into an evening. It is not sexual, although that was one consideration. The rocking chair seemed enough for me for the seeing. Sun, the acrobatic air. I never leapt from my mind, not once. I tried to remember the sound I was born in. I tried to remember a bowl is not the sea. Why should we ignore the pain in our ears? I am older. The sun makes this sound too, but only when the sky turns inside out and turns.
Right. So you have here a poem that's addressed to a goldfish, but abstract poetry does sort of thwart the cliched metaphor, for example, right? Uh-huh. Metaphor is not a real equational reality.
Uh-huh.
Just as Rob Grier said, you know, the metaphor isn't closer to reality. It's a movement away from reality, a likeness, but, and the one way you say a bowl is not the sea, I like that for its Wallace Stevens-like feeling of the jar upon upon the hill.
Right. Right.
That it makes you think, oh, yeah, okay. There's something that might be hard to remember in that. If you want to forget and join the new imagery, the new expressions of color and shape.
Right. Yeah. And I would say, you know, like there are probably 100 different movies where a character gets mad at some other character in the story and kicks the tire of his car. Right. Is the character mad at the car? No. Right. And it's the same kind of thing here. You know, the speaker is not mad at the fish and is exploring sort of all those feelings using the fish as a metaphor. Mm-hmm.
It does ask, because it's a question from a sort of narrator, first person here. I'm breaking into an evening. What does a person have to do to have to break into an evening? You know, tell something about you, isn't it? It's a struggle. There's a bit of a struggle breaking through some veil.
Yeah,
and it's not sexual, although there was a consideration there. You know? Again, an emotion is brought up.
Right.
An erotic moment that person can dissolve because you go right back to, it's the rocking chair that seemed to me enough for looking out there at sun, acrobatic air, so on. So you're creating a scene that seems rather ordinary, but you're also seeing what it is that you like.
That's right. And appeals. Also a kind of frustration, I think.
Oh, mm-hmm. There is a good bit of that. Trying to remember the sound I was born in. My goodness, that's going to take some doing. So, and yeah, that's dying. I love it. It's a good poem. And when the sky turns inside out and turns, if you don't know what that means or you don't know how to put the turning into the right formation, don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
That's a mystery left at the end for you if you want to go back to that.
And it's the sunset that you want to see twice.
Well, that's very wonderful. And we thank you for being here. This is
thank
sound.
Thank you for having me.
This is Sound Poetry, and I was your host, David Gilman.